Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to the Best of My Seven Wonders Live. In each episode of this podcast, I get to talk to a special guest about his or her choice of the seven wonders of their world. Well, many of these we've recorded either face-to-face in a small studio or laptop-to-laptop online. But at last year's Edinburgh Festival Fringe, we recorded a bunch of seven wonders in front of a live audience, which added a new dimension to the whole experience. On this particular compilation episode, we're looking back at some of the best wonders from these Edinburgh live shows. Each guest's list of seven can range from the most mundane items, such as tuna and rice, chosen by Larry Dean, to musical heroes such as Fleetwood Mac, as chosen by the first guest on today's episode, Tiff Stevenson.
Hello. There we go.
Hello.
Sit you down. I know it's a sudden, or you're a proper stand-up comedian, you want your microphone in your hand. But...
I do, and I also saw a clock on the table and I was like, oh my God, I immediately feel pressure.
you don't have to feel pressure. I have to get them the time. And if I don't do it right, then people start rushing out to go and see the other shows that they're going to go to, assuming they are. Okay, well, let's get on with your seven wonders, and we're kind of in that world, because your first wonder is Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, the title of your podcast is one of their songs,
yes.
And it's the alarm clock that wakes me up in the morning. So when I set my alarm, I hear Stevie singing Seven Wonders.
I wondered if we should have had that music played in at the beginning or the end, but I thought it's a bit obvious to, but now I'm slightly regretting it.
Oh, no.
I'm slightly regretting
something
it now.
Obvious.
No, it's obvious as a sort of theme tune. But
yes.
No, I mean, you're entitled to have Fleetwood Mac, and they are, I'm sure people, almost everyone is familiar with them, but they have lived a rock star life as a band and individually to the nth degree. If you think of anything that rock stars have ever done, they've done it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's like this iconic example of the special relationship, because it's Americans and Brits together combined, all the best and worst parts of that. And I think for me, I mean, I used to do a bit in my stand-up, actually, when you're saying about rock and roll lifestyle. I used to do a bit about Stevie Nicks, like how heroic it was that she would just do all of that, because it can mess with your you know, there were rumours of certain substances. There you go. I can get away with that.
No, you can get away with beyond that. I've interviewed Mick Fleetwood, and so I looked up my notes for that, and I can't say if it's between them or just him, but he estimated $65 million worth of cocaine they had used. But
they
might have been between them. It might have been just him. It might have been just that week. I don't know. Sorry, 60 million. I've added five.
Million. Yeah. It might have been after that disastrous Brit Awards with Samantha Fox.
Yes.
I remember that. But, you know, only a man and a woman can only hope for that level of rapport when they host something together.
Well, he's about 7 foot tall and she's about 5 foot tall. So even on that level, they couldn't even get the camera shot to have them both in it, could they?
No. And I mean, that whole period in time where they were all sort of sleeping with each other, sleeping with other people. Two things struck me. So one was the Stevie, because it did affect her voice. I used to do a thing on stage where I'd do Stevie Nicks turning into Cartman, because she'd start beautifully and then eventually get really nasal.
Can you do that without having musical accompaniment?
Oh, yeah. Do you want a blast?
Yes, I'll
do a blast. Yeah. All right, okay. Stevie Nicks, Cartman. All right. Now here you go again, you say you want your freedom, but who am I to bring you down? It's only right that you should have you any dreams you'd like to share? Dreams of loneliness, like a hippie dreams you miss.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm going to see if I can get you to do an impersonation with each wonder.
But one of the central things about that, I think, is the fact that Stevie and Christine had this amazing relationship.
Yeah.
That could have been like, I think that there's a, she joined the band and then she's like 10 years younger and is immediately put up as the front woman.
Yes.
And I think a lesser or a more insecure musician and writer,
yeah,
would have like found that threatening. But I read lots of interviews with them and they said, actually, they like when it was just one woman in the band, you had no voice. And then all of a sudden there was two of us and we could actually, yeah, make changes and,
yes,
and push things forward. So I think from that point of view, I think that it was a really a great example of like female solidarity in like one of the biggest, yeah, rock groups in the world.
Well, it's an extraordinary history all around, because the band was started as a blues band by Peter Green.
Yes.
And then because he was going through a bad patch, he kind of bequeathed it to Fleetwood and Mac, you know, McVie. So they got the name. So the drummer and the bassist have then been in charge from then on. They've recruited and then married, you know, girls that have come in, women have come in. And then Rumours, the album is brilliant, because instead of them writing songs about being rock stars and having too much money, they're writing songs about sleeping with each other, falling out, having an argument. And it's a brilliant album. As a rotten, you know, one voice is singing about the seeing the words written by the writer who's fallen out with the singer.
Yes.
And it's quite
yes,
unbelievable.
John's got to play a song about Christine, yeah, falling in love with a You Make Loving Fun. And
yeah,
it's not about him.
Yeah. It's about the lighting director.
So I love that. I love it. And then, of course, there was Stevie had an affair with Mick at one point. Yeah. And also just the skill, like Lindsey Buckingham, like for me, is like one of the best guitar players in existence. So I just, I mean, that.
Well, he's not in the band anymore. He's been in and out, hasn't
he's
he?
He's been in and out. And yeah, Neil Finn, I think, from the Crowdies, who I absolutely love, Crowded House, it has been all in right, sort of doing some shows. But Lindsey Buckingham, for me, is, you know, I just don't know if it's the same without Lindsey being there. So.
Well, they, yeah, brought Lindsey in, but he brought Stevie in. Am I getting the right combination?
Yes, yes, yeah, that's right.
They were a couple at that stage.
They were a couple, and they were at Buckingham Nicks, I think it was called there.
Yeah.
And they were, yeah, they were musically a couple and together as a couple. And then I think Mick was maybe at studios and heard Lindsey and was like, we're looking for someone else. And he sort of said, well, we're in a band together, so you take both of us or none of us. And then Fleetwood Mac was in that version, that iteration was born, and yeah.
So which period of Fleetwood Mac do you go for? Because they had the early blues, then they had a huge hit with Albatross, which is like nothing else.
Yes.
And then they've got all, you know, the Rumours and then subsequent albums, which are...
I'm sort of about Rumours and I'm sort of about the 80s. I'm kind of like, I was obsessed with this sort of Stevie. I think a lot of the things in my career has just basically been me trying to be Stevie Nicks in some version or another. But, you know, the big hair, yeah, 80s, the gypsy fairy, I'm, yeah, a, you know...
Yeah.
Witch vibe.
So would you have liked to have been in a band like that? Because it's...
I think I would have.
Yeah.
Definitely. And my ego would say I'd want to be the lead singer. Yeah.
So would you have welcomed in another female singer to balance it out? Or
Well, I would welcome in someone whose talents were different to my own.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Christine recognised, that Stevie just brought something very, very different from... She has much more of an earthiness, you know. She's on, yeah, keys. She's a songwriter. And the blending of the voices, their voices blended,
yeah,
so well,
yeah,
so beautifully together. And sometimes, you know, it's just about finding the right people to make a, yeah, bit of magic happen. And so for me, when I hear those songs and songs like Landslide, as I've got older,
yeah,
like when I hear songs like that and actually watching that played live and watching Stevie and Lindsay, like, yeah, kind of communicating with each other on stage. It's really, really magical and beautiful, and quite, well, like, emotional.
Well, this is a very, very good choice, if I may say so. But I can't help being reminded that in his book, he's, there are times when they're going to gigs, concerts in 14 separate stretch limos because they're not talking to each other, yeah, except on stage, and they all have to have a limo. They've made fortunes of money, though Mick Fleetwood has been bankrupt twice in the course of all this. Rock star lifestyles are just fantastic to observe from the outside. They do that for us to be entertaining. They play the music and they have these ludicrous lifestyles. But maybe you have this lifestyle as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've used 15 independent limos at this festival. Yeah. So,
yes.
I feel like it's all part of the journey and the art, and that's rock and roll. You've got to have, you look at the Eagles, or, you know, like, you want to kind of see these grand, big. You don't want everyone to get along all the time, because sometimes when the fights, the passion comes out of that and they create brilliant things out of it.
Right.
So there has to be a push and pull. If they all agreed with each other, they probably wouldn't be making music as amazing as it is.
Well, you know, I've known Stevie again since I was about 16. You would think after all these years, there would be nothing left to work on. But oddly enough, Stevie's and my relationship is still a work in progress. And I guess that says something, doesn't it, about the care, about possibly the parallel motives that have driven us down the roads that we've been on. And I have nothing but respect and love for Stevie. And I hope she feels that way about me as well.
Good ones here, and some are going to go, oh, yeah, I agree with that. But the first one, I'm surprised, I think, to see the first wonder of the world, all the possibilities of the wonders of the world, and it's tuna and rice. Now, I'm going to have to say, I'll just make full admission, that isn't even something I would ever order in a pret-a-manger or pick up in a pret. I would never pick that. But you've picked it from everything in the world, bar the other six wonders. So, yeah. Explain yourself.
It means a lot to me. Don't shit on my dreams. Well, but I think before we do any wonders, I should clarify that I text this at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So I was feeling a bit weird. I blame the moon.
Yes. It's not crazy. It's not crazy. It's just sort of, why tuna and rice? There's some slightly more sort of wondrous things coming. But tuna and rice. You like tuna, you like rice, obviously.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's it's delicious. It's so easy to make. It's literally a 2-minute job to make tuna and rice. But
I think you've only got tuna rice when you've made it, though, haven't you?
I get this kind of bizarre feeling whenever I have tuna and rice now, because I usually, when I have a meal that I know how to make, I usually just make it for, like, months. And I do not change what I'm eating.
Oh, I see. You keep coming back to it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But now whenever I have tuna and rice, it makes me feel so happy, because it's basically, my pa was in jail for murder.
Wow, this has gone from... straight.
What do you think when you have tuna and rice? Yeah.
So I was on the phone.
What was
to
your
him
father's? I used to be a criminal barrister. Did I fail to get him? Was it in Scotland? I didn't practice.
It was Scotland. It was culpable homicide.
Kind
of like a former murder.
Yeah.
Former murder. I don't know.
It's a slightly lesser charge, but
It's good lawyers. And
anyway, sorry. Your father was in jail for
not my father. My friend. Did I say
friend? Your friend.
Which one did I say?
Did you say for?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah. But actually,
Daddy? Yeah.
God, I'm getting into trouble there. But I'm not sure which is a more startling thing to say.
Oh, my God. That's going to be the best show of the Fringe. They are. Turns out your dad is in jail for murder, Larry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just a flashback to my earlier job. I'm perfectly happily talking to people's, with parents, and themselves have been in jail for this and that. Anyway, so your friend, okay, let's correct that. Yeah, your friend. So is your father somebody who's likely to sue on the bay? If we put this out as a podcast, and some people may have switched off before it got corrected. I cannot walk down my street without people pointing at me saying, murderer, murderer. Friend.
You should be fine, man. My dad's just a paedophile. Anyway,
Not
well, I've never met any of them around the BBC. I can. Not that we knew at the time. That's the main. So your friend. I think I'm tempted to say don't name him just in case this goes wrong. I misunderstand something else.
No, I won't mind. It's all good.
So your friend was in jail for murder.
He's in jail for murder, yeah. And he was in jail for murder. I'm eating my tuna and rice. But I was on the phone to him and he was saying about...
He's got a phone in his jail?
Yeah.
He's suffering up here.
Yeah. Oh, it was like one of the last years of his sentence.
Yes.
And so he was like in an open prison. And then he said, he's like, oh man, I was so glad to be out of that shithole I was in before. Mm. I was like, oh, how bad was he? He's like, oh my God, the food was disgusting. Mm. And I was like, all right, what do you have? And he goes, man, tuna and rice every day. I'm literally looking at my tuna and rice. Yeah. Being like, I can't believe I'm living like a prisoner.
Yeah.
But the thing was, I was like, before he got done for murder, I got murder.
no, stick with the murder is better.
And before he did, though, like me and him were like, we're mates in school and stuff. And the reason why I started comedy was because... weird reason was basically I moved from Glasgow to Southampton where I went to uni because it was the only place that would have me because there was not enough people to do the course. So they needed some money. But basically I was committing crimes, nothing like homicide or anything
like
that.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Or what my dad said. I said my dad. Yeah. Like that. I was stealing money with my pals. And if anyone's listening, this is all made up.
Yeah.
But we were stealing money and they all got caught and I didn't.
All right.
So that's why I pissed off down to Southampton.
Yeah. And did they suspect you of being, I don't know what you call it in Glasgow, like a snitch or a grass, that you were an undercover police officer or grass? Something?
No, they didn't actually, man. Because luckily, I think I kind of weirdly was like upfront about the thing. Not to, because some of them got caught for that, some of them got caught for other things. And then it was I don't think we're going to get done for it now. Although it'd be good PR if I did, to be fair. Yeah. But then when I moved away and all that, I was like, okay, cool. I'm not... Because it's weirdly, it's so stressful committing crimes.
Mm.
Like, I don't think we give them enough credit.
Yeah.
I think we should clap them every Tuesday or something. But it's like... Criminals are under a lot of stress because you're always thinking you're going to get found out.
Yeah.
And so when I moved down to Southampton, I was like, right, I'm no longer going to do that because I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to let all these people down and stuff. So I've not like stolen anything since. Although actually, after some Edinburgh shows, I do feel like I'm stealing money from audience members. But but then, but weirdly, so whenever I have tuna and rice and talking to my pal on the phone, I do weirdly think, I'm like, oh, I could have actually been made to eat that every day if I hadn't changed my life. Well, it's a weird seven wonder, I know.
But it's lucky. That phone call, that conversation is lucky because, you know, you say he was in his last year of his sentence. If lucky he mentioned it, because you might have met him at the prison door or something, or he came round afterwards. Oh, come in, whatever your name is. I've got some lunch all organised. It's my favourite. It's tuna and rice. And he'd have done another murder. I think we better move on to the next wonder because I'm frightened where all these wonders are going to take us. They all look quite, not too dangerous, but we've already got to a murder just with the tuna and rice. The least pleasant fish, I think. I love fish. I don't know. Whenever I've accidentally had some, like in a sandwich or something, it always just, I think, this has been here too long. This has been... Whereas, you know, salmon or smoked salmon or something like that, or a fish and chips, that always tastes sort of healthy to me.
Oh, no.
Which it obviously isn't necessarily.
Yeah, fish and chips, man. Yeah. to be fair, my favourite... If you get fish and chips in Edinburgh, it's usually the same as, like, in places like Inverness. There's something so beautiful about seeing Americans feeling as if they're having, like, authentic Scottish cuisine. Yeah. And they have that big shiny American smile, being like, hey, can I have a haddock and chips? and the guy behind the counter be like, you want a brew with that ice? It's totally two worlds colliding.
Yes,
I love it.
Yeah. Well, I just say fish and chips because in you know, down south it's always cod, and there's a dividing line somewhere halfway up England where it becomes haddock. So there's no point in you know, just go with the flow because that's what they want to give
you. Have you never had a bone or something and then like that? Because that usually freaks me out about having fish and chips because I find bones in it and stuff.
No, no, we're not really getting on here. I don't like tuna. You don't like fish and chips. It's
Do you like murderers?
Yeah. Well, when I was a criminal barrister, I was very happy to get a murderer as a client because that's a bit more interesting case than most.
So, criminal barrister, that's the defence, or was?
As it happens, I did both. Not usually in the same case, but I would. That was a big bonus.
Because my ex was a lawyer, and I didn't know like how, because obviously we watch it on TV and stuff, I didn't know how different it was in the UK of like the fact that they don't always say like Your Honour, they always say My Lord.
Yeah, well, it's impossible for me or anybody like me to watch a crime drama on the television because they get all that stuff wrong. And sometimes it doesn't matter, but... this is just a rant of mine. There was a big series on a few years ago. I can't remember what it's called now, but it was some seaside place. And the second series, they said, there was a crime. And the victims of the crime said, we want to get this woman to prosecute the case. Get her out of retirement. And the whole plot was built around this. What victim gets the right to choose the prosecuting counsel in a court case? If you think that, we can't really trust your opinions. Anyway, never mind. That's just a right. But anyway, you know, I'm sure everyone would agree. If there's a world you know about and you see it televised or in a film or even in a book, you think, oh, that's not right. Well, obviously a bit of, you know, for dramatic license is not too bad, but if the plot is built around some completely misunderstanding.
Oh, no, I get the same thing with comedy, man. Like, you probably all know, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Was completely scripted.
If only I had something written down here to say back, I'd...
Let's make crispy rice tuna. So I'll take some of this tuna that I recently broke down and chop it up into small cubes. For our sushi rice, we'll go 2 cups water, 2 cups rice, and a small bowl of...
But music is your wonder. Now, why is that? Because you an expert on music, a fan of music, play music, or you're in awe of music?
I've heard it.
Yeah.
No, I think for me, music, and it comes down to what I was saying before, if you know anyone who's with dementia, there's a brilliant YouTube clip, and I think it's a woman in southern Europe somewhere, I don't know, Spain or Italy, but she's got 2 sons and she can't recognise them. And they've obviously, the family have filmed this clip to show the importance of music, and they play some music and she sits in front of the piano and she can barely notice it, but then she plays it note for note.
Yeah.
And to me, that's an illustration of how important music is to human beings. It's like the last bit in your soul dies.
Yeah.
And I think it's having it in your life and the absence of it would be unthinkable to me.
I think people do that in like memory clubs. People can't really communicate, but you start up an old song and everybody can join in, assuming they could sing it in the first place.
Yeah, and it's just that, it's that little bit about music. I think it just enriches us on so many levels.
Yeah, but do you play an instrument or anything like that?
No, I bought a piano.
Yes.
Because I got a few quid.
Yeah.
And I started playing it a little bit and I stopped because I've started doing something else instead that I need me time for.
Okay. Do I need to ask what the other thing is that you're doing your time for?
I'm learning sign language.
Oh, right.
So I'm learning British Sign Language.
And do you want to explain why you're doing that? What's the...
I'm making a documentary which we're going to finish next week, actually. Because my oldest son's deaf, but he's never really accepted this, so he gets by with hearing aids.
Yeah.
And at some point he might lose it, and so we've decided to try and learn sign language so we can talk. Although to be fair, he lost his hearing when he was 15, so he'd already stopped talking to me anyway.
But he'll want to talk to you later, so that's all right.
So that's the journey of it. And the documentary is that I'm learning sign language good enough to do a gig to an entirely deaf audience.
Yes.
Which I'm going to do next week in Bedford.
All right. Well, not many people here are going to understand it, I suppose, but how would you sort of start telling a joke with your hands and with the sign language?
How would I start telling a joke?
Do you have to deliver it in a particular way, or is it...
Let me just think of something. So during the lockdown, we adopted a dog.
Yeah.
A French. That's the sign. By the way, for French. Oh, you know, you think that's bad? That's the sign for Scotland. That's true.
And it could be worse.
That's the sign for Germany. Honestly, God. Yeah, it's true.
And again, that could be worse.
So we adopted. What a lovely sign that is. That's adoption.
Yes.
We adopted a French bulldog. No. It's true. It's good. Bull. It's yeah. Good. So I'll do it. I've got my back to you, haven't I? So we adopted a French bulldog, but it's got no tail. I've never had a dog with no tail.
Yeah.
I can't understand it. Because I look at it, yeah. I don't know what mood it's in. It's like having another wife.
What I like about that, John, we can hear you, we can follow you, we can see you. It's brilliant here for the people in the room. But we are recording a podcast, so that's 5 minutes of... That's 5 minutes of dead time on the podcast, but bear with us, everybody, if you're listening to this.
I know, the bad thing is they won't know we're both naked, either.
Yes, and some of the signs you were using were...
I needed three hands.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jokes. That's my wonder.
Yes.
Jokes. Because in a lot of ways, it was my introduction to comedy. When I did my first gig, I was totally naive what stand-up was. And a girl brought me in, and I thought, this is about just being in good form. I'll tell you a couple of jokes. And I know a lot of jokes. So I started telling a joke, and people started laughing at the fact that I was telling a joke at a comedy club. And I assumed that they had heard the joke. And I was like, oh, you know that one? Oh, okay. All right, forget that. And I start another joke, and then they thought that was funny. And then, oh, no, you know that one too. And then it became a bit like people thought, oh, I'm actually doing a whole bit about not actually telling a joke.
Yeah.
And I was genuinely like going, oh, no, you know, you don't tell me you know that one. Does anyone? And I was going, does anybody not know this one? And everyone's laughing. Like, I genuinely thought they knew it.
Yeah.
And then it's good to hear people coughing again. Isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Simple things you missed, didn't it?
Well, welcome to our super spreader event. It's,
But I was, so I just love jokes, but I did. But when I met stand-ups, and they wouldn't know jokes, they didn't really like the concept of telling jokes. And I really like, there's certain jokes that I thought were, you know, like I made a film. I went to Cannes. And people would say to me, "Oh, like, I would say, what's your film about?" And they would go to this. And I go, "Well, I've got a joke that, you know, it's a lot shorter than that, and it's a lot more complicated than that. Than, you know, like a whole film would be, you know, wouldn't touch on what a joke. Some jokes just you go, And then from that, during the pandemic, I was in the most locked down city in the world, which was Melbourne. And we had a curfew, and you know, you couldn't leave the house. So once a day, I'd tell a joke, and I posted it online at a certain time, and they were watched. Like, you know, it was like a couple of million hits on every one of them, and it furthered my career immensely. I had a really good pandemic.
what are you thinking of? Give us an example of a joke that you.
Well, I did a list. So, no, I did a list in as far as this is what they wear. Like,
yeah.
So I did a joke.
You've
a
done
day.
A lot of preparation for this podcast.
More than you,
just
you
didn't. But I didn't get anything sent to me on it.
So I just did a joke a day, and I've got the days numbered. So you can anybody can shout out a number 1 and 10, and I'll tell that joke for you. 8.
Oh. Yeah.
8. Oh, I. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A guy breaks out of a hospital, runs down the street with a white apron on, you know, ass crack showing, drip running out his arm. Nurse, doctor, come back here. And he's down a street, down another side street, slips down a side into a pub, shakes him. He's up the barman. He goes, double whiskey straight. And he knocks it back in one go. And he says to the barman, he goes, oh, I shouldn't be having that with what I've got. And the barman says, what's that? And he goes, 50p.
Very good. Well done, the guy. The guy who said 8.
Yeah, number 9. Yeah. No. Yeah. Number 10. No. Anyway, they've got to be short. Guys, just number 10. Guys, just I could lose everyone right here. Guy says to his friend, what kind of ringtone have you got? And he goes, I haven't looked, but I think it's a brownie pink. So short ones. Anyone that was less than 30 seconds, people really clicked on. And there were certain jokes you could try. And like, and people just looked like it was a highlight of the day, especially during lockdown. Mm. But drunk guy, there's number 5 if you're interested. Thank you. Drunk guy goes into the library and he goes, fish and chips, please. Mm. Librarian goes, this is the library. He goes, sorry, can I have some fish and chips?
This is going to be a flashback.
I remember that day.
Can I mention Frank Carson? You know Frank Carson?
Oh,
from
yeah,
your
yeah.
I once did a gig. This is not really a podcast of my stories, but I was asked to do a big charity dinner with lots of things going on, and they said, because Frank Carson normally does the joke, he's been doing it for years, but he's not well, he's had a heart attack or something, so he can't do it. Could you replace him? And I thought, I'm not sure I'm the most obvious replacement for Frank Carson, but fair enough. So I went, and then we got close to it. They said, well, we think Frank is actually well enough to come. He can't do his, you know, thing, but he'll come and he'll be sitting at your table. Oh, okay, because I'd interviewed him before. So, as you know, Frank Carson, if you even remember Frank Carson, he just does nothing but tell jokes. Yeah. I don't know how he ever hears.
He never
hears it. I don't know how he can hear a joke, because he never does anything except swear. So then he came, and then when we got towards my slot, somebody said, well, Frank said he would just go up and do a little bit before you. So Frank Carson's going to do some stuff, and then I've got to go up. I said, yeah, okay. So up he went, and he was getting requests for jokes. You know how a singer might go, so instead of, he would do a couple of, do that joke you did last year about the Irishman joining the army, and he did request jokes for about 35 minutes into my 10 minute slot, and oh, you know, Clive, and I was, you know, it was all right. I survived, but it was a hideous moment.
There's a joke about that, which is, that was one of the jokes. It's on the thing. It's literally about, not Frank Carson, but a guy in prison, and on his first night, he hears them shouting out numbers, 56. Yeah. And well, there you go, we got sick of telling jokes, so we just numbered them. And then they're shouting out numbers and laughing and something else. And he joins in, number 4, and they all, 222, and they all start really laughing. And he goes, what's 222? And he goes, that's a cracker. They hadn't heard that one before. Yeah, I was on...
I thought it was the guy joins in and shouts out a number and he gets nothing. And he said, well, I don't know. Well, it's the way you tell him.
The other variation of it. Yeah. But I think... with alternative comedy, there was a little bit of a highbrow thing. Like, they were associated with a generation of comics that probably weren't as hip. But there's such a great little format thing, and they're so punchy and so, you know, like, to the point.
I think you still need to have jokes.
Oh, totally, And it was interesting. Like, I can't remember jokes, but if someone tells me a joke halfway, I'll turn into Frank Carson. I'm doing it. You know, it reminds you of a joke and then you're off. But when I had to sit down and actually go right every day, try and think of a joke, and I got to like 100 and something that were all tellable.
Yeah.
And then they moved into the really good jokes that you can't tell.
Yeah. But were these jokes you were making up or you were remembering?
No, people these told jokes.
You these have a sort of ring to them, these jokes.
These are jokes. I don't know who thinks these jokes. I have tried to write one of these jokes and they're awful. Like, I've never even come close to the complexity and they're so word perfect.
Yeah.
And you go, that is such a good... And no one seems to know who wrote them. Where are they coming from? And they're just out there. They're free for all of us just to use. And it's really like, they're really nice things to remember. Yeah. And like, my father would tell me jokes and they would like involve horses and carts.
Yes.
And you'd go, oh, that's a different generation. Like, the guy goes up the house and the horse.
Yes.
And you go, oh, yeah, that was, you heard that as a kid. So that, yeah.
As early as the late 14th century, or indeed as late as the early 14th century, the earliest forms of jape were divisible into the two categories into which I now intend to divide them. The earliest manifestation of the basic simple precipitation jest incurred, as will be seen from the demonstration, a disproportionate amount of internal risibility on the part of the operator.
So the next thing is Magic Mike XXL.
Double XL. Magic
XXL.
Mike XXL.
Okay. All right, sorry.
I don't want to suggest that we can tell things by people just by looking. Am I correct in assuming you have not seen Magic Mike XXL?
I have not seen it. It's a movie. I know it's a movie.
You know
and
that.
And if you were compiling, if anybody in this room was compiling the list of their top movies of all time.
Yeah.
And we're doing wonders of the world here, but the top... I don't think there's anybody in the room, apart from yourself, would have put the original film, Magic Mike, on their best film of all time, let alone a fairly shabby sequel, as I understand it.
That's where you're wrong.
Exactly. But, I want to hear why, of all the movies in the world, and of all the gin bars, and you've gone into this movie.
Magic Mike XXL. It's, for me, it's not my favorite, but to me, it's the most wondrous.
Okay.
Also, this is one of the ones we can... I'm not going to go monosyllabic with you on this one, but I'll keep it brief because I don't feel it's going to land well in the room. Let's see how we do.
Tell us what the film is
about. Okay, so am I correct in assuming... Did anyone in here see the Soderbergh film Magic Mike?
Yeah, okay. There's six people in the
room.
That's fine. And now you're going to lose them with the sequel.
But that's fine. Yeah. Did anyone in here see Magic Mike XXL? Not a person in here.
No.
Okay, so that's fine.
Tell us about the movie, though?
This is what's interesting to me about it.
Okay.
So you said that you'd seen Magic Mike, yeah? And did you enjoy it? Parts of it. What was interesting. So Magic
Which
Mike...
Which parts is the question that suggests itself to
but
me?
But this is the whole thing. This is the whole thing. Is that Magic Mike was done by Steven Soderbergh, this like very serious filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so it was about like male stripping, but it was also a serious film. And it was nothing of what it wanted to be.
Yes.
It wasn't the Soderbergh film that you wanted, but it wasn't a ridiculous film about male strippers either.
Right.
So Magic Mike 2 XXL comes along.
Yes.
And they give you everything that Magic Mike was supposed to be. So it is about male strippers, but it is so funny. It is so well cast. It is very well acted. I love the arc. There are incredible performances, and nobody knows how good it is. And when my husband, like, if it's ever on TV, I'm like, I'll be watching Magic Mike XXL. Yeah. And my husband thinks that it's like... I'm doing a shimmy and shake. Like, yes. That it's sort of a sexy, and it's not sexy. It doesn't do anything for me. But as someone who just loves a show, it gives you the most incredible show. And there is sort of nothing. It's to me, it's like one of my best comfort watches.
Okay.
Because there's always something, I swear to God, there is always like a new performance where you're like, oh wow, that's really funny. Or it's just, it's so, Channing Tatum is a comedic genius. That's all.
Right. Okay.
And move on to the next. We'll move on to the next one.
Yeah,
it's the wrong choice
for the room. It's directed by Gregory Jacobs. So Soderbergh didn't.
Stay on board. Whole thing. Soderbergh was like, this is not right. And they got the right guy for this job.
Yes.
And it's an incredible film.
Is it anything like The Full Monty or something like that that more people may have seen, which has got a bit of male stripping in it? Not the most gorgeous male, but it's
this
funny.
It's got more sex appeal, but without being sexy.
Right.
And I know you're thinking that makes it a worse film, but I think the lines that it walks as a film just endlessly interest me.
Yes.
And I watch it every year, and it's a glorious moment for me.
All right. Well, I think if apart from anything else, you've sold this film
to
this crowd.
Clive,
and anyone
I haven't
listening on
sold the
yeah,
film.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a single person in here who's going to go watch it, but it is one of my great joys in the world.
Well, at least anybody found watching it at home by their partner can say, oh, I'm only watching it because I saw this wonderful comedian recommending it to me in that fantastic podcast that Clive Anderson does.
This is what's going to happen.
Or was it Clive James? I can never remember which. But the one that's still alive, anyway.
You know what? Fuck that. I bet you can go in there right now. I bet you can go in there and fucking make her day. Who, her?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That girl looks like she's never fucking smiled in her entire fucking life.
Then that's your goal.
And if you can't do that, then no one fucking can. And I'll go back and do the fucking old routine.
Oh, okay?
No. You're not a fireman, Richie. You're not a fireman.
Oh, here
I'm not a fucking fireman.
You hate fire.
I'm a fucking male entertainer.
Exactly. Fire, you're a male entertainer. You can fucking do it. Now go do it.
BDR.
Let's go on. While we're in a fighting Scots mood, let's go on to your second wonder, which is whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you know these or I'm having to remind you.
No. If you'd asked me to tell you what the seven were that I'd sent you about 5 days ago, I might have struggled. But now, whiskey would have been on the list. Yeah.
Yes, well, it's still...
And I should say right at the outset, I'm not really much of a whiskey drinker.
You just like it for the elegance of the look of it?
I quite like the smell of it.
Yes.
Maybe once a year I'll have a dram. I have...
Oh, you're a very careful person. I'll smell it for a year, then maybe take a sip. Screw it back on again. Put the cork in and put it away. Come away, Ian. You'll want a sniff. You want a sniff of my single malt, won't you?
just a single malt. Yeah. Margaret, get the kids out. We're opening the bottle. Back off!
What is this? You like the smell of it?
I do. I love the smell of it. I'm kind of. I am genetically programmed to drink a hell of a lot of it.
Yes.
But so far, I've managed to resist that. But what I have done, Clive, is I bought a cask of the stuff.
Oh, right.
I've got 190 litres of it maturing.
Oh, right.
So it's going to be party time in six years' time.
Whereabouts is that? Is that in the spare bedroom or is that...
We don't have a spare bedroom.
you must do. You've got grown-up children.
The Airbnb.
Yes. Now, how does this work? Because if you're doing it, it must be a good idea. I trust you for your financial acumen.
It's an investment.
Yes.
So it's the Isle of Harris Distillery.
Yes.
And as a kind of funding program, you could buy a barrel of whiskey.
Yes.
And the distillery is no more than a couple of miles away from where my paternal grandfather was born.
So, right.
The Macaulays were from the Western Isles, Harris and Lewis, predominantly Lewis.
Yes.
And I went up there and saw the new distillery and decided that I would buy a cask. So coughed up And then you get to pour your own 190, well, I say 190 litres. It diminishes, as you might know, when it's in the cask.
Yeah.
And then they spray your name on the end of the barrel, and yeah. it gets stored there. Scotch whiskey has to be 3 years and a day before it's sold as Scotch.
Yes.
And then I think most of us will wait 10 years before we draw off the first lot of bottles.
Yes.
Some might do it a wee bit quicker. But so you can do it over the, you know, the yeah. period of your lifetime or those you leave it to.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
But so my father loved whiskey. My father loved a dram more than once a year. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, okay. So I'm still interested in this investment thing. So you've paid over the money to pay for it, and then uh-huh. do you get the money back only when it's sold 10 years, 14 years, or whatever?
I'll then have to pay for the bottling and the labelling and all that kind yeah. of stuff, and then there's a duty as well that you have to pay. And it's yours to do whatever you want. You can either, I wouldn't put it up for sale or anything like that. I would gift it or something like that.
All right.
So it's not really going to make me a lot of money, but there is the potential to do so. If you wanted to sell the whole barrel or bottle off the whole barrel and sell it, then you're going to make a bit of money.
You can, and you roll out the barrel, and then that's. So I'm trying to see if is there some sort of tax dodge in this, or is it?
No, not at all.
No.
No, but I'll tell you hopefully what you might find is a funny story. So the casks are all in rows in bond, and part of the distillery tour is you now get to look through all the barrels, and as I say, they spray your name, they stencil your name on it. And I think mine was a pretty early barrel, and it sits beside somebody that's probably a bit better known than me, HRH, the Prince of Wales.
Oh, right.
Or I think he's known as, what's he?
Duke of Rothesay,
right? And my youngest son and his wife were up, and they did the distillery tour, and they're standing looking at it, and there was these Americans doing the tour. And my daughter-in-law looked at the label and said, "Oh, my God, that's your father," pointing at the barrel, right? And these Americans think my son is fifth in line to the throne. Yeah.
Wrong barrel. Yeah. Yeah, excellent. So it's Rothesay and then Macaulay.
Yeah.
That's a good name for a whiskey.
I know.
Yeah.
I call it the real heritage or something.
The real
like
Macaulay.
But a wee bit about my ancestry. I mentioned that we're from Lewis because, and I maybe told you this before, but Donald Trump's mother is from the Isle of Lewis. Her name, his late mother, was Mary MacLeod from Stornoway, but his grandmother, her mother, was a Macaulay from the same village in the west of Lewis as my great grandfather.
Oh, what's
got it?
What's happened there?
I thought I heard bagpipes. Yeah. Hey, I'm not related. I'm not him. not a direct relative. Thank
all right.
Goodness.
So would he wear the Macaulay tartan, do you think, Trump?
Oh, yeah, I could wear it. He could wear it.
Because I think it was a Trump tartan. It's got big checks on the borders. But I did that in the Mae Macbeth gag. So
on the other side of the family, way back, I had an ancestor called Hadrian Trump. He built a massive wall.
Yes.
You might have heard of
the one country that has given its name unchallengeably to a product that is known and accepted in every corner of the world. Scotch. Enjoyed by all peoples on all occasions.
The pub landlord character, I think you invented it here in Edinburgh.
Yes.
On the spur of the moment. Or?
Yeah, in 1994.
Yes.
Which is my carbon dating.
And, yes.
I was doing a show with Harry Hill, and we were in the Pleasance Cabaret Bar and had a gap in the show, which I'd failed to fill up to that point. I was supposed to be comparing and hadn't come up with anything that worked.
Oh, you weren't waiting for an actual different compare to
turn up? No. So I said to Harry, well, why don't we say the compare hasn't shown up and the barman's offered to fill in?
Yes.
And he said, yeah, do what you want, because all my bright ideas so far had worked so well.
So had you tried lots of other characters?
I tried a couple of things, and they just hadn't worked. And I wrote some ideas down, went on, and did it. It initially started out the pub landlord was not really very happy about being on stage and talking to people. That wore off quite rapidly.
Yes.
He wasn't very confident, and obviously he is now. But and then we did our fringe run, and by the end of it, I had an act. It was the strangest thing. The second day I went, cut my hair off, bought a terrible suit, and we were away.
Yeah.
Well, I've done all that myself, so yeah. That's...
Well, learn at the knee of the best, Clive.
So did you then... I mean, I think I can work out the answers, but did you then think, aha, this is brilliant, I'll be still doing this 30, 40 years later.
No, I thought, will I still be doing this in a fortnight, was what I was thinking. But, yeah. But I took it to the London Cabaret Circuit, and it worked, and it's because it's an attitude, it's a bottomless pit. You know, yeah. You just feed a subject in and sort of turn the handle.
So there have been lots of events in recent years.
Well, two. I mean, it's such a target-rich environment at the moment. For if you're, where do you even begin at the moment? There's so much happening. Yeah. And there's so much sort of in conflict with itself as well. It's a brilliant time to be writing about the world.
So would the pub landlord have a view on the, you know, which conservative leader should become the actual leader?
Well, he thinks he should be the conservative leader. Yeah. I mean, he had a grudging admiration for Boris Johnson because wouldn't it be brilliant to be able to lie like that? Wouldn't it just be the greatest superpower to look someone in the eye and say, or even look your wife in the eye and say, the reason I had sex with your best friend was it was the best thing for me to do at the time. Wow, incredible.
Well, but actually, it would have been preceded, no, I did not have sex with her. That is me in the photograph.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, accidentally, a part of my body may have...
Exactly. Yeah. The thing is, lots of people say about him that he's tremendous fun and he's a great laugh. And once you've met him, you'll be bound by the spell. But the time I met him, I just thought he was a colossal arsehole. So what can you do?
Well, you see him pictures on his holiday in Greece he's having at the moment. He looks as though he's having a good time. And
but it also looks, it's a bit odd, isn't it? Because he's got those young people with him. There's no one his age. And I worry about him. You need to hang around with people of your own vintage, Clive.
Absolutely.
No. Job done.
Let's start with your first wonder, if we may, which is the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So a little bit of where I'm sure the pub landlord wouldn't necessarily think of.
Well, he used to. I mean, the thing is, my father was a railwayman, and so we travelled everywhere by train. We had these tickets that meant we could travel everywhere by train.
Yes.
And also, if a thing like the Channel Tunnel was getting built, we'd know about it. And the pub landlord's view was that the slow bit of the, because it used to be when you came into England on the shuttle or whatever it was, the train had to slow down because we hadn't built the track yet.
Yes.
And the gag, because we hadn't just then got round to it.
Yeah.
It was in France, it's a sort of straight line to Paris. Yeah. And the gag I used to have was that the driver was English. And he was just trying to get in and out of France as quickly as he possibly could, because he was only human, and enjoying the English bit of the ride. But, I mean, I think it's the most astonishing thing. You get in the train, it goes under the ground, and then you're under the ocean, and then you're, it's amazing. But also, like lots of things in life that are really astonishing, about 2 minutes in, you forget.
Yes.
You go, all right, we're in a tunnel now, whatever.
And it was fantastic. They managed to, the two points met, and we thought, well, how's that going to work? And I have a nostalgia memory, a sort of comedy memory of that, because I had a chat show on the telly at the time. We used to do quite a lot of bits in between sketches and props, and the guys used to make fantastic props. And this one just had to work to get the laugh from the studio audience. So we had a super duper train coming from France going into the tunnel, and it went into the model tunnel, and then out came a sort of old steam train.
Oh, brilliant.
Three seconds of television.
Fantastic.
Somebody working in modeling, train modeling for hours and hours. And if it had gone wrong in the middle, that's not work. We'll have to throw that
fantastic.
Away.
Fantastic.
Yes. I mean, but oddly enough now, just to stick up for Britain, oddly enough, it's kind of positions reversed now, because if you start in London, you go to St Pancras, which is a fantastic station.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Beautifully rebuilt.
Yeah.
You go on the train, you get to Paris, and it's Paris Gare du Nord is still a bit of a rather old station.
It's a bit scruffy. I mean, the old King's Cross, you'd get off and there'd be that KFC opposite the station.
Yeah.
And you'd think, right, I'm in London now.
Yes.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, it's such a shiny station. But the other thing about the Channel Tunnel, of course, is if you, it, like all good journeys in life, there is a wrong turning, and that's the one that goes to Brussels. So You stood at King's Cross. Yeah. You think, I could go to Brussels, I could go to Paris. Yeah. And you, the idea that you would go to Brussels.
Yeah. You're going back into your pub landlord character.
Well, a little bit. Yeah.
Is it a very liberating thing to have a character you can perform? And I've obviously asked this sort of question to Dame Edna or you know, Barry Humphries, even Steve Coogan with his Alan Partridge things, and all his other characters. Yeah. You can say stuff that, well, you don't say you necessarily agree with, but you'd like to say out loud.
Yeah, or that you kind of want to hear out loud.
Yes.
And also you can be reactive in a way you never ever would. Because I tend to agree with the last person I spoke to.
Oh, right.
Whereas the pub landlord, agrees only with himself.
And he only listens to himself.
And I kind of admire that kind of confidence in people. So it's quite good it's a fun thing to play with. And as you say, you're not yourself. There's a gap between you and it. And also the audience have that thing where they know where they stand with the character. As if I was myself, I literally wouldn't know where to start.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right.
Yeah, I would if I was me doing an hour stand, I literally wouldn't know what to begin with. Yeah. It would probably be, it's all right, I'm not going to be nasty to you at the front.
Okay.
And then probably be rude.
Be nasty, yeah. Exactly.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production in association with Alaska TV and powered by the Acast Creator Network.